Hello, and thank you for tuning in. You are listening to BikeRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.BikeRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp.
Good day, everyone, and thank you for finding your way to us here today at the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my very special guest is Jan Karpman, and she is co-author of Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way Around. And Jan is a wayfinding expert with 30-plus years' experience on hundreds of projects in large, complex public facilities, believing that designed environments and their wayfinding systems should respond to the needs of the people who use them. She is proud to have involved thousands of users in her work. A skilled speaker, writer, and coach, Jan is the author, along with Myron Grant, of the award-winning books Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way Around, and Design That Cares, and How to Find Your Way Around and Design That Cares, and Plan, wait a minute, let me get this correct. Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way Around, and Design That Cares, Planning Health Facilities for Patients and Visitors. There we go. She is a founding partner in Karpman Grant Associates, Wayfinding Consultants in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way Around is a guide for directionally challenged people, which I am, and it explains that finding your way around is a learnable skill, not a mysterious instinct that you're doomed to live without. A lighthearted introduction to the ins and outs of wayfinding, it provides step-by-step guides to following signs, reading maps, recognizing landmarks, using GPS services, and more. Along with anecdotes describing how everyone gets lost at times and photos showing how being turned around is not always your fault, the book offers a wealth of practical advice to help directionally challenged people and everyone else. And you can find out more information by visiting her website, which is www.wayfinding.com, or you can go directly to the book website, which is www.directionalsense.com. And I do have direct links to both websites in the show page description. So with that, let me go ahead and welcome Jan to the show. Good day, Jan.
Good day. Thank you so much for having me on your show.
It is my pleasure. And as I kind of alluded to in the introduction, I am one of those. I am. My friends either call me geographically challenged or directionally dysfunctional. So it depends on the person. But
right.
I fit both
right.
categories. So I'm really happy to have today's conversation and learn a few things that can help me find my way. So first of all, I'd like for, if you wouldn't mind, share with the listeners, I gave them a little bit of your background, but if you wouldn't mind sharing a little bit more about, how it is that you became so interested in being, being a wayfinder and why you wrote this book.
Okay. Well, I'm happy to tell that story. And for me, it goes way back. It goes back to a family trip to the beach when I was only about 3 years old. I was a very independent three-year-old, and I decided, without telling anybody, to go off on my own along the boardwalk. I can still see it today, lots of pretty striped cabanas, all different colors, all in a row. But the thing is that they looked alike, and soon I couldn't tell where I was, and I started to cry, as any good three-year-old would do. A very nice woman in a banana yellow bathing suit, I remember, led me back to my frantic mom. And something about this experience stuck with me. Even as a toddler, I felt the frustration of not being able to find my way. And that was the first time I got lost. So fast forward, I'm now a consultant to large organizations working to make their buildings easier to navigate. My firm, Karpman Grant Associates, works with confusing places like hospitals, museums, airports, even parking garages. And they all need to be more user-friendly so visitors like you and me don't get lost, aren't late, and don't end up so stressed out that they don't come back. And what we do is we plan what we call wayfinding systems, signs, maps, landmarks, to help people get where they're going, even if they're first-timers, like that 3-year-old on the boardwalk. So one day, wearing my mom hat, not working for a client, just being a mom, I drove a car full of kids and the teacher on a school field trip. And the teacher whispered to me, very embarrassed, that she herself didn't want to drive because she always had so much trouble finding her way to new places. And a little bell went off in my brain, and I thought, aha, I bet I can learn a lot from you. So I paid really close attention. We drove a long way, and she was amazed that I could do things that I thought everybody could do, that I could follow directions that were kind of sketchy, that I could recover from wrong turns, and most incredible of all to her, I could reverse the route we took and stay the course for the 90-minute trip back to school. And I thought everybody could do that, but clearly I was wrong. So she was the first directionally challenged person I knew of, but I realized that there had to be others. So what I did was I interviewed her, and it turned out that her husband was also directionally challenged, and I started asking around. And I discovered many people, including some of my very own friends and relatives, who experienced this consistent difficulty and frustration finding their way. And during this, I heard lots of stories of attempts to navigate everyday places that didn't work out so well. And I knew that I could help teach them how to do this. And that was the inspiration for our book, Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way Around.
Wow. You know, I'm glad to know that, you know, there are a lot more people, you know, like me. I mean, I know that, you know, I've run into a few, and we always have this common, you know, sigh of relief when we meet someone else who is, you know, directionally challenged. But I didn't realize that it was really so, there were so many people.
There are. I wish we knew really how many there were. It would be a helpful statistic to have. We don't. It's anecdotal right now. But my experience over many years of doing the research for this book and writing this book and publicizing it and talking about it is that I have never yet run into a person who, when they ask me, what is this book about and who is it for, no one has ever said, really? I don't know anybody like that. They say instead, oh, my God, that's me, or that's my daughter, or that's my best friend, or that's my mother. Everybody, if they're not directly challenged themselves, knows somebody who is. So I think it's more common than we give this credit for.
Yeah. Now, do you, I mean, because this, you know, is, I mean, I do truly believe that it's, you know, there are a lot of people out there, like you said. So is there maybe something, like a good reason for this? I mean, does our environment facilitate, you know, getting lost, or is it maybe something in our brains? You know, in your research, is there kind of a like a good reason why a lot of us are like this?
And that's a great question. And the answer to that question is yes. There are definitely aspects of the environment, and that's the environment in a really big sense, and I'll be happy to talk a lot more about that. The architecture to sign design to the terminology used to describe directions to websites and everything else that can either be helpful in helping people navigate or can detract from that. So that is a big piece of it. And yes, there are also wayfinding and the idea of being able to orient yourself in space and picture where you are in relation to the things around you and imagine a journey from point A to point B and back. All of that is brain related. And I think right now in 2014, we as a society understand more about how insects navigate, how birds navigate, how animals navigate, than we do about really how people navigate. And that's unfortunate. I hope we're going to learn a lot more in the future, and I think we will. So there are some initial studies showing how parts of the brain actually get larger as people do more navigating when compared with people who do less navigating. So you can actually see part of the brain expand. But some people call it cranial wiring. In fact, Ann Landers, who was directionally challenged, called that a glitch in the cranial wiring, which I thought was a great way to put it. Glitch in the cranial wiring. But so yes, it's based in the brain. If you are directionally challenged, that is how you are. And the whole point of this book and our approach to it is to say, but that's not all you are, and that's not the end of the story. There are definitely things that you can do to get better at finding your way around. But there is a basic difference between people who you can plunk them in the middle of an unfamiliar place and they'll go, ooh, let me see. How am I going to find my way out of here? Let me experiment. Let me look at the maps. This is a challenge. It's kind of fun. Compared with people who say, oh, my God, I don't know what I'm going to do. I have no idea. Help me, lead me, direct me, tell me how to get out of here. So that's a basic difference.
Wow. Now, personally, I'm a good map. I do great with a map. I mean, that's thank goodness. At least that particular part of the brain is wired properly. One of the things that you talk about in the book is a difference between sense of direction and directional sense. Is this kind of what you're talking about, like with the people being plopped down and figuring out, or is that something completely different?
No, I think the term that we've all grown up with is sense of direction, and that's something where do you have a sense of, do you have a good sense of direction? No, my sense of direction isn't so good. How's yours? Oh, mine's great. So in using that in everyday life, it's something that we understand to be innate, that you're born with this, and also kind of final, in that if you have a, quote, a good sense of direction, you're fine, and you automatically know how to read maps and how to follow signs and how to recognize landmarks and all these other things. And if you don't, if you have a quote, poor sense of direction, poor you, you're in trouble. And, we'll feel sorry for you. We'll make fun of you, maybe in a good spirited, but still, people will laugh.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of done. The idea of directional sense is that navigation skills are learnable. Nobody is born knowing how to read a map. Nobody is born, understanding how to follow a sign. People have to learn it as they have to learn everything else. The difference is that people who have more spatial abilities pick up these skills more quickly and may not need to pay such close attention to them, whereas people who have trouble navigating, who we would say have a poor sense of direction, may have to take the skills and the steps one by one and go through them carefully and also get over the idea that having a poor sense of direction is a lifelong sentence. It's not. And there's certainly things. You're saying that you are directionally challenged, but you know how to read a map. Well, that's fantastic. And that's not necessarily common for everybody with a poor sense of direction. So clearly, you've taught yourself or somebody has taught you the skills that you need to understand a map. And maps are such important tools in finding your way around, that's really important. So you're good evidence of that these skills are learnable. And the purpose of our book is to help people who are directionally challenged step by step through these various skills, learn them, and come to realize that navigating is something that they can do. It just may take some more effort on their part.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting, because when it comes to sense of direction, now I like I said, I can do maps fine, but when it comes time to, like, yeah, and during the daytime, you know, east, north, south, east, and west, that's cool, you know, especially if the sun's out, you know, that makes it real easy, you know. But it's like at nighttime, it's like, you know, try and go east here or go west there. It's like, wait a minute, you know, let's talk right and left, you know what I mean? Because it's just, and it's interesting because I have a very good friend who has an incredible sense of direction. I mean, you know, you talked about earlier about reverse route, you know, you take a route and you know, being able to, your ability to kind of go back, do it in reverse. I completely lack that. I mean, truly, when I thank God for GPS, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but I mean, you know, I'll go ahead and get my directions, but when it's time to go home, it's just like, reverse it, you know, do the little switch and reverse, and, you know, because
yeah.
It's just, you know, or, you know, I'll count how many lefts, how many rights, you know, but it's, but I guess, you know, like you say, it's good to know that it's a learnable skill or, you know, a learnable trait, you know, because I think a lot of people feel that, you know, either you're born with a good sense of direction or you're not.
That's right. And you know, like you think of all the things that we learn to do in a lifetime. Nobody is born knowing how to play the piano. Nobody is born knowing language at all, let alone a different language from their native language. Nobody is born with a wonderful tennis serve. These are all skills that people learn and develop over time, and it takes a lot of practice to become good at them. Some people have a natural proclivity for some of them. We'll say somebody is musically talented or they're, you know, talented athletically, and for those people it may be easier to develop these skills, but they still have to work really hard, and they still have to practice a lot. And I think that is the case with finding your way around. It may not come naturally to you. In fact, and for some people who I've talked to, they say, in fact, they naturally turn in the opposite direction than they need to really be going. So it's, you know, your own sense of direction may be turned around too. But the thing is that if you say to yourself, you know, this is something that I know I can become better at, and I know I need to put some effort into it, and I need to practice it, then doing those things and going through the steps, you can become better at it.
Yeah, I have to laugh because you talk about, you know, guessing which way to go. I mean, it is funny. I'll do that sometimes, and excuse me, it happened yesterday. I was headed into a farmer's market. Now, I went and looked at the map. I was looking at the GPS. I didn't have the exact address, the number on the street, but I had the street address. So I thought, okay, I'm going to take, and I was given the driver directions. We got up to the street. And I said, okay, now there's this teeny, teeny, tiny little, you know, area, like to the right, excuse me, but then it turns immediately into a new street. I said, now there's this huge other, you know, the street goes on and on for miles, you know, to the left. And I said, so it makes sense that we would take the left. So anyway, well, of course, it wasn't the case. You know, I should have made it right instead of a left. But and then there will be the times when I will try, you know, because I understand that, you know, it's one of these things where, you know, I'm not as bad as I, you know, sometimes make myself out to be. But so I try to use my intuition, you know, and think, okay, now which way would I go? Should I go? And, you know, and then I'll start playing mind games. Well, I think I'll go right. Well, no, because I said right, I'm going to go ahead and go left because I'm always thinking, you know. And it's just funny because I get to the point of playing games. And I laugh about it, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, you know, I've learned to not take it seriously, you know. And I think, have you run across where people who are geographically challenged kind of accept it to a degree? You know, I mean, recognize that it is and don't get all stressed out about it? Or is it generally a stress-creating thing?
Yeah, I would say generally it's stress-creating. I think there are people who will be the first one to laugh at themselves as opposed to waiting for other people to, you know. But no, I think it is, and it's not only stress inducing, but for a number of the people who we interviewed, it also had to do with their sense of self-esteem. Many of the people we interviewed were, you know, intelligent, competent professionals, you know, very successful in their particular fields. But this was the issue that they just couldn't get. You know, they just couldn't come to terms with it. And so it was problematic for them. And so I think one of the big messages of our book, and this is the first thing that you said today, was to know that there are other people who are directionally challenged. Because a number of the people who we talked to said, "You mean I'm not the only one? You mean there are other people out there?" So that's the first thing, is to say, you know, as we know that normal human behavior and normal perception and cognition and all these things that we human beings do and are, there are huge variations in what's normal. And a sense of direction, the ability to navigate, there are huge variations in that too, like everything else. And some people are on the, you know, the high end of the bell curve, drop them in the middle of the desert and they'll find their way back to, you know, the place that they started. And other people at the other end, and those are directionally challenged people who, you know, I've had people, you know, there was one story in our book of somebody who got lost in bed, you know, who was in a hotel in an unfamiliar room, and the bed had an unusual configuration, and she woke up in the middle of the night and had to use the bathroom and couldn't find her way out of the bed in the dark. She kept bumping into the walls, and she said, "You see how vulnerable I am? I got lost in bed." So, you know, that's one example of what can happen. And what this did was it just made her, as opposed to saying to herself, "Gee, you're in a strange room. It's the middle of the night. It's dark. You're just waking up. Of course, you know, you can't either remember where the bathroom is in this hotel room or what the configuration was." No, she said, "You see, I'm so dumb, I can't even find my way out of bed." So a lot of it is how you frame it. And if you're a person who gets lost over and over and over again, you come to expect it of yourself, and other people expect it of you, and it kind of diminishes what you think of. And you know, so yeah, I think in that sense, there are a lot of people who take it very seriously, and it's an impediment to them. But can I tell you a story about somebody who was kind of ashamed to admit that he had trouble finding his way around?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
This is a man named Matt, and he was on a business trip, meeting with clients in one of their two offices in a small city where he'd never been before. And Matt is pretty directionally challenged, but he doesn't want clients to know that. And so here's a situation where in business, this is something where people assume you're going to be able to find your way, right? It's kind of a pretty basic thing. So for him, this was really something that he felt bad about and wanted to hide. So his group split up in the middle of the day and agreed to meet later that afternoon across town. Matt had downloaded a set of online directions, but just to be sure, he casually asked directions of one of his clients who lived in the area and who would know the shortcuts. And the client said to Matt, "Oh, just take Western." And Matt thought, "Okay, you know this area. I don't know this area. I'll do it. I'll take Western." Well, you can imagine what happened. Matt took Western, but it didn't lead to any place he recognized, and he drove and drove. He frantically tried to use Siri on his iPhone to get directions, but Siri was not in the mood to be helpful that day.
She's stubborn,
I know. By this point, his online directions weren't useful anymore, and soon he found himself barreling down the interstate on the way to nowhere. So he was sweating and panicky at the thought of being lost and late and losing face with his clients. So here you've got, you know, an emotional issue, a business issue, and it's got physiological ramifications. He starts sweating, and he's kind of panicking about this. So how could he get out of this mess and quickly? Well, Matt needed to know how to ask for and follow useful directions, and this is one of the skills that we talk about in our book. His wife, one of the few people to know his secret, bought him a copy of our book, Directional Sense, and Matt studied the chapter on asking directions and learned what to ask and what to do if directions aren't so good. So here's what he did. He pulled over and he remembered what he'd learned from Directional Sense, that directions can be given in such an offhand, shorthand way that they're not helpful. So he tried to calm himself down and start over. He noticed the intersection where he was and which way he was facing using the trusty compass app on his iPhone. You also could use a compass in your car if you have one of those. He phoned the second office. He didn't identify himself, and he casually asked, "How do I get there from here?" They told him, and fortunately he wasn't that far away. He followed their, fortunately, great detailed directions, and he made it to the meeting just in time. "Hey, Matt," one of his clients said as he walked in, just a little sweaty, "you didn't get lost or anything, did you?" And everybody laughed. "Nah," he replied with enormous relief. And next time, he promised himself, he'd just rely on one set of good directions and not second-guess them. So you can see here how kind of his directional challenges and his wanting to hide them perpetuated his problem. You know, he asked for directions, and he followed them, and yet they weren't useful, they weren't detailed, they weren't helpful, and then he got himself in trouble from that. So it can, you know, it can kind of snowball, and you can get yourself in trouble. But I think this issue of traveling on business and finding your way on business is another dimension for people who are directionally challenged.
Yeah, it does. You know, I remember when I was in the corporate world, that was one of those things where, excuse me, and I did a lot of traveling in one of the roles that I had, and that was one of those areas that, you know, because I knew that I can have a challenge in that area, I always made sure that I had, you know, myself a good set of directions, and quite often it involved me flying places, so I would more than likely be looking at, you know, the route that I would be taking to get from my hotel to where I was going. So, because it was
right.
one of those important things, you know, and when you're in business, you want to be on time. I mean, because it obviously
yep.
the first impression and all that kind of thing. So
yep.
it's real important.
Yep. Yep, that's absolutely
yeah, very much so.
Absolutely true.
Yep. Now, we're about ready halfway through the show, so I do want
mm-hmm.
to invite callers. If you'd like to call in with a question to ask Jan, feel free to call in. The number is 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening in the chat room, if you would like to call in, if you'd like to type in your questions, feel free to do that there, and I will be sure to pass them on to Jan. And I have to let you know, Jan, this is kind of funny. I have a listener, Rihanna, she's in the UK. She is also geographically challenged, and she was saying that, and sometimes they do, when they go on trips, you know, they kind of go out and it starts off, let's see where we end up, and it becomes a magical mystery tour for her. So,
I like that.
I know. I've done many of those tours. So. But anyway, so when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about, you know, the whole idea of GPS, you know, now that that's a kind of a major part of our being right now. And then
yep.
also, you know, just whether or not it's a bad thing, you know, necessarily to have that. And then I'd also like to talk a little bit about kids and teens and elderly. Those are also two age specific types of people that I think sometimes have, you know, an additional type of challenge when it comes to directions. Okay.
Okay.
Okay, great. So everyone, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this very brief break. Let's see here. Let me get that all set up. All righty.
Here's what Janelle had to say about Joy Potential.
Joy Potential is the kind of book you don't want to put down once you start reading it. It's a story that makes you realize you make your own joy or sadness. As one who believes everything that happens in life is meant to happen for a reason, either good or bad. But the thrill for me about Joy Potential was the ending, which I won't reveal, but just urge everyone to read it. A good, thought-provoking book.
Hi, I'm Roy Worley, and I'd like to talk a little bit about Robert Sharpe's thought-provoking and insightful book, Joy Potential. I personally witnessed a wellspring of people who have responded to share their personal experience as to how reading Joy Potential affected them and their life in a very positive way. It's been interesting also to see how different parts of the book really impact people at different levels of their consciousness. So if you have not read and then reread Joy Potential, get your copy today.
For more information, visit www.joybook.me. That's joybook.me. Or call 843-808-0777.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, I do want to thank Janelle and Roy for their testimonials about my first book, Joy Potential. And also, again, everyone, I do have my second book, which is called It's No Secret, Spirituality Bites, is out, and that's going really well. And just released yesterday, I have a brand new calendar for 2015. It's called Dare to Dream in 2015. And many of you who follow me on Facebook know I am an avid nature photographer, and I've taken 13 pictures of my best pictures and combined them with insights from the Spirituality Bites book and put them together as a calendar, and we basically focus on an insight for each month, like dreams, strength, prayer, intuition, expectation, all kinds of fun things. So anyway, all of that is available at my website, www.biteradio.me, biteradio.me. Okay, now back to today's show. Again, my very special guest is Jan Karpman. She is co-author of Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way Around. And you can find out, again, more about Jan by visiting her website, which is www.wayfinding.com. Or you can find out more about her book, and it sounds like it's a great book, one that I'm definitely going to be picking up. And it's called Directional Sense. You can find out more about that by visiting www.directionalsense.com. And as a reminder, I do have links to both of those websites in the show page description. Okay, Jan, we're back.
Okay.
All righty. Well, just before break, you know, one of the things that, you know, I kind of alluded to was, you know, is getting lost or having this challenge necessarily a bad thing?
Is being lost necessarily a bad thing? Sometimes it is. If you have to be places on time, if you have things at stake, that is, if you're trying to catch a plane or you're trying to make a meeting or you have a business appointment of some kind or other people are depending on you or you have a limited amount of time to get somewhere, all of those things would mean that getting lost can be a problem. Also, sometimes people get lost and they end up in places where they shouldn't be, so safety can be a consideration, too. Getting lost, as we heard in the story I mentioned, also can have physiological effects. People can overexert themselves. They can end up sweaty and you know, walking too far and worrying, and it can be disconcerting, and it can be kind of overwhelming and frustrating. So for the most part, I'd say with the exception of a few fun activities where people put themselves in situations where getting lost is something they do for fun, getting lost is something that most people would rather avoid. I think that, you know, there are corn mazes in the fall that people enjoy, and there are orienteering activities where people go out and search for things, and they do wayfinding kind of for fun. But for the most part, I think people in everyday life want to be able to get where they're going on time, so they can get about their their lives and the things that they're doing, not spending their time trying to find their way.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mentioned GPS, and actually Rihanna was making a top just typed in, you know, basically she also uses, you know, GPS quite often. Mm-hmm. But, you know, but I have found that sometimes isn't all that helpful.
Well, you're right. I think there's certainly been a revolution in our in all of our lives in the last few years, in that, you know, before we had GPS, there were a lot of people who were lost a lot of the time. I think it wasn't well known. People didn't talk about it a lot. But you can tell from the way that people have adopted GPS and the way people rely on it that personal navigation is somewhat difficult. It can be confusing, and it's just easier if you can rely on a device or a thing or the person that you think the GPS voice is to help you. And I think in many cases, in many instances, it is helpful. But there are times, as you're alluding to, when it can get you in trouble. And can I tell you a story about one of those?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is a story of a woman named Catherine, who is directionally challenged, and this is something that happened to her. She was with her kids in the car on a trip from their hotel outside Philadelphia to her aunt's home in New Jersey. And her son programmed their GPS, and they loved their GPS so much that they even named it. They called it,
mm-hmm,
Francesca. So he programmed Francesca, and off they went. And it was a dark and stormy night, literally, not the best driving conditions. But they were confident that Francesca, the GPS, would get them there. As they approached a bridge, they noticed the signs that said the bridge was closed. Uh-oh. So they turned around and tried another route, confident that the GPS would work. And what did good old Francesca, the GPS, do? Recalculating, she said, and then led them back to the same closed bridge. They did this four times, in the dark, in the rain, all to no avail. Now they were totally frustrated and late. So how could they escape from GPS purgatory? Well, Catherine needed to understand what we call the big picture of where she was in relation to where she was going, so she could compensate for a non-working GPS. And this is what she learned from reading our book, Directional Sense. Even though she usually felt intimidated by maps, she decided to drive back to the hotel where she knew someone could help her, and she asked the desk clerk for a map and begged him to also highlight her route with a marker.
Mm-hmm.
So she and her, mm-hmm, kids could then see that there was another bridge they could take across the river. And although they were really late, this time they made it. And she felt she deserved the big hug she got from her aunt. So what did Catherine do to overcome GPS failure? First, she stopped thinking of maps as unhelpful, and she stopped thinking of herself as a map-reading idiot. Next, she asked for help from someone who knew the route and could show it to her on the map. Then she recognized an alternate route and programmed the GPS accordingly. She also took along the paper map just in case. And you know what? She modeled some practical behavior for her kids, too. They could see not to rely 100% on any single, what we call a wayfinding cue, like a GPS, but always to have an alternative, like a map, at the ready. So I think that's a good example of a story where here we all think GPS is going to work. We love our Francesca, but sorry, Francesca had one route in mind, and the bridge was closed, and she couldn't be flexible enough to accommodate that.
Really? Yeah, really. Yeah, I've seen that. Well, you know, and that is interesting, and that's, you know, I think, first of all, being a model for their kids is wonderful, because it really shows problem solving skills, you know, which is, you know, a great way for the kids to learn. And then, you know, if the, you know, that challenge happened to be passed on genetically to any of them, if anything, it starts to enable them to be able to, well, to really start learning the skills early.
Yes, and that's a really important point, because one of the things that we found, again, anecdotally at this point in time, is that directional challenges do often run in families. And that's why back when I was saying, you know, when I tell people about this book and they go, oh, it's my mother, it's my son, it's my daughter, it's my uncle, that's no joke. And it's me. Often that is the case, where it'll sometimes skip a generation, but many of the stories that we heard from people about their directional challenges said, yes, and I'm just like my mother, and I see it in my son, and that kind of thing. So in fact, you're right. It can be something that is passed down genetically.
Yeah. Well, you know, there was one question or one topic that was in your book that I had, when I read it, I kind of laughed. It's called, the question is about do a lot of people have trouble finding their cars? And when I laughed, because when I read that, the first thing that popped into my head was my Eeyore moment. And that was because I was lost in Disneyland, and I couldn't remember where I parked. I ended up parking in Eeyore. But I mean, I knew it was a Winnie the Pooh character, and I just could not remember where I parked. And so every time now, whenever I have those moments, if I should happen to be in a large parking lot and can't find my car, it's always called my Eeyore moment. But is finding cars really that common challenge for people?
It is. And you know, to go back to your original question of why do people get lost, is it our brains or is it the environment? I'd say here's a perfect example of where it can be both. And I have a story to illustrate that too. This is about a woman named Juliana. She lives in Washington, D.C., but she had to pick up her sister Jill at the less familiar Baltimore Airport, BWI. She did all the human things. She ran late. She misjudged rush hour traffic. So she was totally frazzled by the time she arrived, even though her GPS, in this case, led her correctly. Although she's directionally challenged, she was proud to have found the airport parking garage. She parked her car. She ran to the shuttle bus, which took her to the airport, where her sister was annoyed to have been waiting for a while, as sisters will be. The sisters made their way back on the shuttle bus and then to the garage, and Juliana led the way to the car, but what was missing? The car. It wasn't where she thought she'd left it. This was not her Eeyore moment. Jill rolled her eyes at Juliana and her directional challenges, thinking, oh, there she goes again. And after walking in circles for what seemed like hours, they threw themselves on the mercy of the garage attendant, who drove them around and around and around, but they still couldn't find the car. So what was missing beside the car? Juliana needed to take time to note not only where her car was, but, listen to it, here comes the big one, which garage or parking area she was in.
Yep.
She'd gotten a copy of our book, Directional Sense, as a gift, and it taught her to pay attention to and even write down which garage or parking lot, as well as the section, floor, and space where she left her car. So where was the car? Juliana was completely frustrated and furious at herself, and finally the light bulb came on, and she said, maybe there's more than one garage here? So she asked the attendant. Oh, yeah, he said, there are two. An hourly garage and a daily garage. Your car must be in the other one, which, of course, it was. Now Juliana writes down the name of the garage or lot or takes photos with her phone, a very good idea, before she leaves her car. Mm. This happened a few months ago, and she's good at finding her car now, but her sister's still mad. So here you are. You go to the airport, you go to the garage, you think you're doing really well, your GPS has gotten you there, you've paid attention, and you don't know that there's more than one garage. So that's the environment is handicapping you. And also the attendant, you know, when somebody says, I'm looking for my car, and you don't see the car there, you'd think the attendant, without having been asked, would say, gee, maybe you're in the other garage. But no, that didn't happen. That didn't happen.
Wow.
So that there are a number of factors. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I used to live in Las Vegas, and that was, I mean, that's where I learned my which garage, you know, lesson, you know, because there, so many of the casinos have multiple garages, you know, and it was, you know, it was one of those cases where I learned very quickly to be able to not only recognize, you know, which floor and which spot, but also exactly which garage, which entrance point that I, you know, enter the building at, you know. And you know, speaking of Las Vegas, you know, that there, they thrive on creating inside the building an environment where it's so easy to get lost. I think it's done purposely so people stay right where they are at this play.
Yeah, that could be. That could be.
Yeah, it was really something, because I mean, and, you know, and quite often, you know, in that particular case too, some of the buildings are so large that, you know, actually finding, you know, a landmark or kind of getting an overview of where you are in comparison to other parts of the building, you know, can be really difficult.
Yes, I think that's definitely the case, and especially when you have something in mind and you think, oh, airport, garage, one, you know, that you have to sometimes let go of those assumptions.
Yeah. Now, I'd like to talk a few minutes about a couple of, you call them wayfinding, I guess, tools or ways, like, for example, signs and landmarks. Now, I've also been, you know, I use landmarks a lot, you know, turn left at that building, you know, that I know of, you know. So, you know, but, you know, if you happen to be in a place where landmarks change, you know, that building that, you know, I usually turned at is gone, that can be created an additional challenge.
Yes, that's true. Landmarks are really, I think, one of the most interesting of the wayfinding aids that we have, because they don't involve language, meaning that people who don't speak the prevailing language can use them, that children can use them. And what's great about them is that they do several things. They can act as a reference point. They can let you know that you're on the right track. If you're going somewhere and somebody has pointed out a landmark in directions and you pass the landmark, you go, yep, I'm doing the right thing. They can cue actions. That means if you reach a certain landmark and the directions told you to turn right, you turn right. So you know that's your indicator. And then they can also serve as meeting places. So you can say to somebody, I will meet you at this restaurant, I will meet you at this historic landmark, I'll meet you at this gas station. And so that becomes a landmark, and you both know what it is, and you know to meet there. So they're useful. They kind of anchor you in space. You can use them outside. I think most of us are used to thinking about landmarks on the outside, but they're also landmarks on the inside, too, that are all over, and you just need to recognize something and decide that that's going to be your landmark. They're very helpful to directionally challenge people because they don't involve all this north, south, east, west business that's so hard for directionally challenged people. They're great for people who can't read. And they're also a potential element of fun, of wayfinding fun, that you can, if you're going along your way and you want to pick out a landmark that you yourself will remember on the way back, you can choose anything you want, and it can be something that gives you a chuckle or you find humorous in some way. So they're very useful.
Yeah, it is. You know, and you're right. I mean, I have, now, first of all, here, I live in the South right now. Where it's, I mean, again, I lived in Vegas and lived in California. California was great because, I mean, it was very much like a grid in many ways, and Vegas was much the same, too. So, I mean, for people who are directionally challenged, you know, a city that's laid out in a grid is wonderful. You know, places like D.C., where you got all that, that's not so cool, you know, but You know, but here in the South, though, I mean, there are just so many twists and turns. Quite often, whenever I've had to stop and ask for directions, people use a landmark, you know, system as far as, you know, go past, you know, the old five and dime or whatever, you know, and turn there, or you pass the, you know, the produce stand, and then just about 50 feet beyond that, you know, that kind of thing. So, But you know, and so anyway, I think, you know, landmarks also can, I mean, when you, depending on your geographic location, sometimes, you know, landmarks are very helpful. Now, if you're like in Kansas, you know, we have field after field, you know, so I turn right at the cornfield and it's going to really be helpful. But if your geography is landmark rich, then it would be definitely a way to help those of us who are challenged.
It can. It's also interesting that landmarks, there are several kinds of landmarks. There are famous landmarks, are the things that everybody in the world knows, like the Eiffel Tower or Big Ben or the Washington Monument. And then there are landmarks that are just familiar to people in a certain local area. And then there are personal landmarks that may be important to you and that not necessarily other people would necessarily recognize them. So one thing is what it can be like to try to follow directions that use landmarks in a place where you're not familiar. Do we have time for another story?
Yes, we do. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, let me tell you this one that's about landmarks. So this is about Pete, who is an American Foreign Service officer. He had just moved to the Middle East, and he was taking his daughter to school for her first day. He knew the name of the school, but guess what? He couldn't find directions on its website or see it on a map. By the way, this particular area had no street signs, and worse than that, no addresses. He figured he'd just ask along the way. So he stopped outside a cafe, and he asked the owner for directions to the school. "No problem," the owner said. "You just go to the pasture with the old horse, then turn left at the big tree and pass the corner where the apartment building used to be." Oh, boy. Being a real diplomat, Pete thanked the man politely, but, of course, he had no idea what to do. So what did he need? Pete needed to understand about landmarks. So a landmark can be a rock, a sign, a tower, anything you notice as you move in one direction and remember as you go back. So how did Pete find out about landmarks? A good friend had given him a copy of our book, Directional Sense, as a going-away present, and he saw it as he unpacked. What he discovered was that there's a difference between famous landmarks, local landmarks, and personal landmarks. If there are no signs or addresses, you definitely need landmarks. The cafe owner had used local landmarks when giving him directions. So once Pete got the fine points of using landmarks, he vowed to learn the local landmarks and expects directions to be given this way. He also realized that the directions you want and the directions you get may be two different things. So he learned to find his way around no matter which country he was in. So I think that's a great example of landmarks. We think, oh, yeah, they're great, assuming everybody understands them, but not always. And especially I love the one about, you know, the corner where the apartment building used to be.
Right.
So it's not even something that he could see now. He had to have the memory of somebody who's lived there for a long time. And that's the way people give directions in all kinds of places. In hospitals, I've heard people giving directions about go down to where the mail room used to be. It's across from there, you know, and people know that.
Uh-huh. I know. That's just crazy. That drives people like me into a frenzy.
Right.
What do you
mean? Right.
Goodness.
So now you have to know history in addition to everything else, right?
Exactly. Well, gosh, we're down to about 6 minutes here. And there's one area that I really kind of would like to touch on before we close is regarding to people who are older. You know, as I get older, I'm you know, find myself, you know, maybe a little bit more challenged. But, you know, when I think of a lot of, you know, elderly people in their 80s and 90s, it seems that quite often that sense of direction really gets affected and impaired. Or is that just can that be applied generally speaking to you know, as we age, or is that really just more person-specific?
Well, I think there are things that definitely happen, and you're absolutely right, that wayfinding can be more challenging for older people. And it's not so much that the sense of direction is diminishing, but the ways that we experience our environment, our eyesight diminishes, hearing diminishes, agility diminishes, and sometimes memory diminishes. And so those are the ways that we learn to navigate and ways that we actually find our way around and ways that we use directions and all the other tools at our disposal to navigate. So it's not your imagination. In fact, it becomes more difficult. But the thing, I think, in addition to all of that, there are two things that account for difficulty of many older people in finding their way around. And one is that things change, that, you know, the old post office or the old apartment building or the old whatever it is that did used to be on the corner, and they remember that very well, is no longer there, and something else has taken its place. Or their favorite grocery store or their favorite department store has decided to completely change the layout of the inside. Or new places come and old places go. And so it's not their imagination that everything looks different and feels different. Everything is different. And they live long enough to experience quite a bit of turnover in the physical environment, in places that they once knew well. And I think that it is more disturbing to have once known an individual place or once known a city or town and have it change than to go to a new place for the very first time and try to learn your way around it, because you expect to know your way around this familiar place and you don't expect to know your way around this unfamiliar place. It's disturbing. So I think that's part of it, and I think the other part of it is the digital revolution. And all the GPSs and the iPhones and the iPads and the apps and all of that has left a lot of older people behind. And so many people are using those devices and tools to navigate, and older people may feel intimidated and not familiar with those things. So I think it's all those things together can make it more difficult for older people to navigate.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense, Ed. And, you know, I'm glad to hear. You know, because, I mean, I know that, you know, a few of the people I know in their 80s, you know, I have seen that, and it all kind of really makes sense now that you put it in as far as all of the contributing factors. So, well, Jan, this has been, we're down to the last couple minutes. So if there's anything that you might want to add, first of all, I will be adding your book to my recommended reading list on my website and getting a copy myself, because, you know, it's one of those things where, you know, for those of us who are challenged directionally, that, it, you know, it's great to be able to learn those tips to be able to become more self-confident, you know, and then I think as we do become more self-confident, well, you know, our sense of direction will improve.
Yeah, I think that's really important. It's also nice to know that no matter how old you are, there's always something new that you can learn, and this is something that you can learn at any age.
That's great. Well, thank you for being my guest today. I really appreciate it. I knew this was going to be a very helpful conversation, and it was.
Oh, terrific, Robert. Thank you so much for having me as a guest on your show.
It has been my pleasure. And again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Jan Cartman, and she is co-author of Directional Sense, How to Find Your Way. And again, you can find out more about Jan by visiting her website, which is www.wayfinding.com. Or you can also find out more about her book by visiting the website www.directionalsense.com. And again, I do have direct links to both websites. websites in the show page description. And just one quick programming note that tomorrow's show is going to be a little bit later than usual. I'll be having my friend Kat Darden, a visionary consultant from Dallas-Fort Worth, on my show tomorrow. But we are going to be airing from 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern or 8 to 7 p.m. Central, which is Dallas time. So again, please make note of that change, and I hope you'll join us. So everyone, thank you again for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show, and until we meet again. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.